Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Who Inspire. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Mary Kay Fleming. And Mary Kay is a running coach and also a podcaster. So, Mary Kay, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking.
So, let's talk a little bit about running. Do you run as well as coach?
I do. I've been running since I was 6 years old. My background is a little unique because I started running with my dad when he was recovering from a massive heart attack when I was very, very little, and he was 33 years old. So the cardiologist said he needed to strengthen his heart, and jogging would be the best way to do it, and I've been jogging ever since.
So the
when it comes to podcasting, and I'm sorry.
The cardiologist recommended running for, you know, overcoming heart problems?
Well, to strengthen his heart after the massive heart attack, because what happens in a heart attack is that plaque blocks an artery. And when that means that the heart muscle and the heart tissue is starved for oxygen. So when doctors recommend low to moderate exercise, what they're encouraging you to do is engage in any sort of activity that would help your body utilize the oxygen in your blood more efficiently. That's what makes your heart stronger, and it's supposed to promote lasting health. So when I started jogging, that was why, and that was the cardiologist link. And I probably would not have thought of it the way that I do if I had come to running through any other mechanism. This wasn't a hobby, but it was something that we did for our health each day, the same way that some people take multivitamins.
And you coach?
I do. Yeah, somehow over time, running has become very performance-oriented, and everything you do in the name of performance is the opposite of what you would do for health. So I'm here to remind people there's more to this than going faster at races, and there's never been a better time to do it than now during the novel coronavirus.
Right, I agree. So you're in Colorado. Do you see a lot of people running and jogging as you do? In other words, do you think more people are taking up sports as far as physical fitness where they could do it by themselves, like running, jogging, mountain climbing? Do you think people are more aware of it now that there's the pandemic and they have to do something to fill the time?
You know, we saw a big surge back in April and May with people just wanting to get out of the house, and running and biking were really good ways to do it. And that surge sort of tapered off mid-summer when it became pretty clear that school wasn't going to open and that we were nowhere near done. So at this point, I think a lot of people are so overwhelmed that something as simple as daily movement can be overwhelming. So now we're back at that point where we have to sort of motivate ourselves to get up and go out the door. And it's a lot of us don't know how to do that without a race on the calendar. So that initial surge to do something positive has now sort of gone on for so long that we're basically in a state of trauma. And it can be harder to either stand up, much less justify time away from doing other things. So I think that going forward, things are going to be very, very different. But yes, we did see more people on the roads there for a while, but that's pretty much dropped back off to normal levels now.
So you think this is going to be a problem that's going to be around for a while?
Oh, yes. I don't think we're going to have races again until maybe 2022.
2022? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Valencia Marathon just canceled, and they're underwritten by the same insurer that handles Berlin and Tokyo and Paris and all the other big ones. So I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'm pretty sure all of spring's going to be canceled, and if spring's canceled, odds are very good that fall will be as well. So now my money and my fingers are crossed that the racing world will go back to normal at the end of next year, because it doesn't seem like we're doing very much to stem the tide of a second wave of outbreaks at the moment.
So, in other words, like the Boston Marathon, which takes place in April, you don't think that's going to happen in 2021?
No.
Really? And the New York the New York Marathon is in November. I'm sure
November.
It's not going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to be done
this
year.
Oh, that's already canceled this year. Yeah.
Wow.
Anyone's ready to face that. I don't think anyone's ready to face that yet, but yes, I do think everything's going to be canceled all the way through next year. I'm not sure the industry will ever recover.
Why do you say that?
Well, because the industry is mostly nonprofits. Each race is its own organization. We don't have, like the NFL, the National Football League. Racing doesn't really have a league. The Roadrunners Association of America underwrites insurance, but they don't provide funding or a pool of resources, that business type resources that would keep nonprofits open for this extended period of time. No one could have, you know, having to cancel your flagship race is effectively canceling your revenue stream. So I think we're going to see a lot of these races go out of business. I think New York Roadrunners will be fine, but I worry about smaller ones like Big Sur, for example, has already canceled its race. It happens in April as well. It's one of the bigger ones, and it's already canceled in 2021 and says we'll see you in 2022 and when we're certain that everything will be safe. We don't want to take the risk of planning for 2021 and having to cancel twice. And most races don't have the flexibility to do that. Big Sur just says particularly they're very well endowed. Financially positioned. So I think most of the others will go out of business if they have to cancel a second time. Yeah.
How many racing companies do you envision going out of business? Just off the top of your head.
65% to 70%.
70%? That's a huge number.
I know. I used to be an investment banker, and so I don't throw these numbers around lightly. But what I have seen has not given me a lot of assurance. The industry itself, like I said, isn't particularly stable. So it doesn't have what like a company would have to withstand multiple exogenous shocks like this. And they also don't have multiple revenue streams. Each race becomes its own business. You cancel the race, effectively you cancel the business.
Right. But races like Nike and the big races, you think they'll be around after the pandemic?
Well, Nike doesn't really do races at the moment. They build themselves as a marketing company that happens to sell shoes, and they do that very well. Nike will absolutely be around. Nike has nothing to worry about. Adidas has nothing to worry about. Brooks Running they're in the business of selling shoes. People are still wearing shoes. People are still running. I think they'll be hit in the short term, but in the long term, they'll be fine. I'm more worried about the Rock and Roll Series. I think that is in pretty serious financial trouble. I worry about Iron Man. I worry about anything. So the New York Roadrunners Association they put on the New York City Marathon, and they put on marathon like little races throughout the year. But their little races can still attract up to 18,000 people in Central Park. Mm-hmm. So them, for example, I'm not that worried about. Anyone, pretty much everyone else, like the Denver Roadrunners Association, they put on little tiny races that might have a smattering, like maybe 50 to 75 people. So they could theoretically keep going and stay socially distanced, but they're not going to be having any larger events that would draw the sponsorship dollars and create the revenue model. So lots of the ones that we have to worry about are not bigger names that you're familiar with. They're the smaller races in your neighborhood that you've never paid attention to that put on a charity run every year, or your local marathon. I think a lot of local marathons are going to be hit, and then we'll see not a recovery, but what emerges will look very different in 2022.
I live in Albany, New York, and there's the Freihafters Run for Women, and it attracts between like 3,000 to 5,000 people. You think that's
one of the biggest?
Look different? You think that's gonna it'll look different after the pandemic?
I do, unfortunately. I don't know exactly what that will be, and I don't know the specifics of that particular race. I'm less worried about the 5Ks and the 10Ks because they're either a smaller part of a larger separate organization. So what it's raising money for, it raises money in other areas, and the cherry on top is a 5K or a 10K that happens every year. For half marathons and full marathons, though, it's a very different story because they are so large and can take most of the year to plan. So this is effectively the full-time job of the organizers in a lot of big cities. So those are the ones that are going to be more affected, not the 5 or 10Ks that are super popular. And if I was a betting person, I would bet that Freihafters is going to be fine.
So for men and women who, you know, enjoy the marathons, and if the marathon that they usually ran and is canceled, where do you think they're going to go?
Well, honestly, that's tough to answer. I can tell you for me, as somebody who ran for 20 years almost without, or 15 years rather, without entering a race because they didn't have them in rural Tennessee. It didn't cross my mind. I didn't run to train. I ran literally for my health, and I enjoyed it. It became a mental health stabilizer as well, in ways that I would only come to understand much later in my life. So I don't have any trouble finding a reason to run. I think a lot of people who fall into the boom bust cycle of fitness where, oh, I want to get fitter, so I'm going to sign up for a marathon because it's a really big goal. So I'll stay really, really committed to my really, really big goal. And then they get burnt out because they bit off more than they can chew, and then say, well, I'm going to take a break from running and not do that for a while. And then they lose all the fitness that they built. And then they say, well, I want to get really, really fit again, so I'm going to chase this really big goal. So there's a lot in the hobby jogger, non-professional, recreational running world. That is a cycle that I see really frequently as a coach. And I'm hopeful that this cycle is decidedly not healthy at all. And that's one of the reasons why I founded my program. It was to sort of help break that cycle and smooth it out throughout the year. So you just stay fit, don't worry about it, and when you feel like you're ready, sign up for a race. Instead of putting all this focus on a race and performance, we're just going to take it day by day, and the race is a reward when you feel good and ready to go, not something you stress about in between. So I think my athletes are fine, and they're going to be fine. I do worry about others, though, who don't have coaches and don't have people who are invested in their development and who are not really understanding the role that running plays in their mental health, as well as the pressure that racing can put on their mental health. Those are the people that I worry about, and I don't know that they'll still be running at all.
Wow. So you also podcast about running. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I love it. Like right now we're getting ready to film one with Lindley Ashline. Lindley is one of the purveyors of stock photos for non-normative bodies, meaning if you want to find a picture of a Paralympic athlete, that you, or a, let's say a a fat black runner. You're probably not going to find them in most stock runner catalog in most stock photo catalogs. So if you were to do a Google search for something that specific, all roads usually lead to Lindley. And we're getting ready to have a conversation about why she isn't a runner and why it never crossed her mind to become one, because she didn't see people like her doing this out in public. She didn't see herself represented. So it was never something that crossed her mind that she could or would be smart to do. So I find conversations like that to be really interesting. We could talk about like the running and the movement itself, but you're going to find yourself having the same conversations over and over again. I like talking about the people and the choices that they make and how they feel about their relationship to their bodies as well as to the movement that they choose to engage in. I find that a lot of people I meet will tell you, like, I love running, but then they start talking about it, and it doesn't sound like they like it very much at all. Like, it actually makes them feel bad about themselves, and it hurts, and they're never quite satisfied. And I'm like, that's kind of the opposite of what, you know, a hobby is supposed to do. A hobby is supposed to fill your soul and fill your cup and make you feel, you know, refreshed and ready to go. And usually what I see in people is that running makes them feel depleted and worn out and almost hating it. They have this love-hate relationship. It's like the abusive or the nasty boyfriend you just can't get your friend to break up with. Like, what are you doing? So the conversations that I like to have on the podcast either address that dichotomy or sort of dance around it, like the uptick I see in people getting serious about running again during the times of year when candy tends to be around. Like, month of October, people are like all up in it, and that's one of the reasons why, or at least the women I know are. February, the same thing. The summer, it's like I've got to, it feels like they're in a never-ending battle with their bodies, and a lot of that pressure comes from the fitness industry as well as diet culture. So it's fascinating to me to have these meandering conversations with other people because, as I say on the podcast, we're never really talking about the running, not at this level.
So how long have you been podcasting?
All in all, about 6 years.
So when you do a podcast, does it go regular radio or how do you get your message out?
Well, we're on iTunes and CastBox and pretty much every podcast feed you could think of. So once we throw it out in the universe and we share it on social media, that's when the listeners come in.
So you think that the majority of your listeners are through social media, yes?
How do you mean?
I said, do you think the majority of your listeners are through social media?
I don't think people typically use social media. You mean the discoverability of the podcast or the actual consumption?
Yes.
I feel like
yes.
The consumption of the podcast through social media is very low, but the awareness, that's where brand awareness really comes from. So I think a lot of people, well, I know because I track these sorts of analytics. I know that people find the podcast in searches through iTunes for specific keywords, through Google searches for specific keywords. So social media is a component in our marketing mix, but it's not necessarily the primary driver of listens. The vast majority of our listeners are clients.
You know, the reason I like podcasting so much is, you know, you don't have to be a multimillionaire to buy a radio station. All you need is some equipment and a theme or a passion of yours, and you're good to go. Would you agree?
Correct. Totally agree.
Okay, great, great, great. So, talk about some of the stories that you've done podcasts about.
Well, back in March, when the mandate to wear a mask came out, was starting to roll out across the country, I looked at one of my employees and said, as a black woman, is it really safe for you to go out in public in a mask? And that led to an interesting podcast called Running Wild Black that we released on the first week of April. And 3 days later, Ahmaud Arbery, the young man who was shot by an ex-cop white supremacist in Georgia, became national news. That and running while black was seen to be like that in and of itself became quite dangerous. But running a black person running through a neighborhood with a mask on, whether or not people intend it as such, can be seen as a very threatening thing because of what we have been conditioned to think bodies in brown skin do. So that was a really interesting story, hearing from our sponsored athletes and my employees of color while we did a podcast about exactly that, the dangers of running while black and the ways that the precautions that they have to take that our other runners don't necessarily have to think about at all in order to stay safe. And the threats that they have to recognize that aren't the same as everyone else's. Other stories that I've liked a whole lot were we did a podcast with a bunch of doctors who were using running to assist with their mental health during the initial COVID spikes that were coming down the pike in February, because a lot of nurses and trauma hospitals were seeing the fallout long before schools were canceled. So those are probably two of my favorites. And a third one that's close to my heart was an epic takedown of that horrible movie, Britney Runs a Marathon, that came out on Netflix last year, because it had a lot of fat shaming nonsense in it. I watched part of it and couldn't continue because it made me really uncomfortable. I didn't like the themes at all. And it turns out a lot of my runners agreed with me. So.
Great. Good. So you enjoy podcasting.
I do. I like having a place to speak my mind and to share the opinions of the people I care about.
That's really great. The thing I like about podcasting is, you get a guest on and you give them a platform. I think it's really important. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I'm sure that you'll be podcasting for a while, do you think a lot of your podcasts will be centered around how people are coping with the pandemic?
Possibly. I don't want to overemphasize that. I do think it's important that we address the things that we're doing for the sake of our mental health as the pandemic continues. I think it's important that we keep this conversation going to make sure that people are getting some movement and that they're okay, because movement has been scientifically proven to impact brain chemistry in positive ways and reduce depressive symptoms. At the same time, I think we need to be able to escape at times as well. So we try to balance out our podcasting production schedule, heavier themes with lighter themes, for that reason.
So if somebody wants to hear your podcast, can you tell them how they can do it?
The easiest way to do it, anywhere you currently find podcasts, you can find Running Life. We're on Apple Podcasts, CastBox, your favorite podcast player, Overcast as well. Or you can go to our website, www.fitnessprotection.com/podcast, and we also release episodes there.
So how many podcasts over the years have you done?
Close to 1,000 at this point.
Great. How often do you do it?
Twice a week. There was a point where I was doing it 6 days a week.
And each show was how long?
My previous show was micro podcasts. Those were about 6 minutes long, and that's why I was able to produce them at such a rapid rate. Currently, I'm focusing more on the long-form podcast, Running Life, and that one is anywhere from 45 minutes to 90 minutes long.
So when you do a 90-minute podcast, you're talking to more than one person, right?
It depends. Sometimes I just have a guest that, the chemistry's there. You click really well, and it's hard to rein the conversation in.
Wow. So we have just a couple of minutes left, and, you and I have been talking about, you know, postponing, you know, the marathons and stuff. What's the school situation like where you are? Are colleges and secondary schools resuming? Are kids going back to classes?
They are, but I think that's going to end very soon.
Really? Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're seeing spikes every day in the news and clusters that are showing up on college campuses and elementary schools. So I can't imagine it'll be very long before we're distance learning from home all day long again.
So you think everything's going to be done remotely like it was in, like, March and April?
I do.
Really? And you don't see the marathon meets for at least a year and a half? Would you say that's a good figure?
Yes, I do. I stand by that figure, too, because I just think that it's going to be increasingly difficult to get insurance coverage for anything that isn't so properly socially distanced. And a marathon, it's almost impossible to socially distance or to maintain throughout.
Right. So if somebody wants to contact you, you're a coach. Do you coach on the internet?
I do, yes. We're all virtual, online. That's why I'm able to have clients in seven countries. The whole idea of having to be in the same physical location has been changing over time now, and I can be, you can be coached and loved in the comfort of your home whenever you need it most, without having to worry about meeting place, which frankly might work for a couple of weeks, but never works all the time.
So if somebody wants to contact you, you know, for you to be their coach, how can they do so?
They can go to the website at www.fitnessprotection.com and see the plans and pricing page and see all the ways that they can interact with us.
Great. So, Mary Kay, in the final minute that we have, you know, people are undergoing such transformations in their life. What do you think running and all kinds of physical activity at this point in time is so important?
Well, I think that this is the new midlife crisis. Instead of my generation, which got married later and got started later, we're not looking back and saying, I got married too young, I had kids too young, and having any sort of like second thoughts or regrets about it. We have lives that have made us very comfortable and made us very happy for the most part. And if anything, this midlife turn to running or Ironmaning is just us looking to see if maybe we can challenge our own ideas about ourselves, which is a really beautiful thing to witness. There's nothing I love more than someone who just takes up running to see if they can do it in their 40s or their 50s, and that's where the bulk of my clients come from. So these are people who've never thought of themselves as athletes or runners, just looking for a hell yeah type of moment as they enter a new phase of life, and I love being part of that journey.
Mary Kay, thank you so much for being on Women Who Inspire. You've been listening to Mary Kay Fleming, who's a running coach and also a podcaster. I'm Cynthia Pooler. And if you like this show, like us on Facebook, Women Who Inspire. Thanks, Mary Kay. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too, Cynthia.